League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Your teams, our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We have an Uncle Barney sighting. He disagrees with you. He doesn't think that Jack Nicklaus would Tiger Woods would have ever got to Jack Nicklaus' record. Now he was three off. Uncle Barney says he wasn't on pace in his mid-30s. Isn't going to happen. Wasn't going to happen.
Well, Uncle Barney, I hate to break it to you, but if you think about the amount of time that he lost due to...
About 4 years.
Four years' time. It's like when everybody makes that LeBron, Michael Jordan, never-ending argument, the one thing that everybody seems to forget is how much time Jordan spent away from the game of basketball, that where you start talking about statistically and otherwise. And when you look at the amount of just overall just regular tournament wins and the fact that he blew everything else out of the water and just continued to just steamroll the competition before we had the competition we have nowadays, and because of the fact that you play the Masters every year, and he knows it better than anybody else, I will strongly disagree with your take, Uncle Barney.
No Koepka, no Dustin Johnson, no Rory, no Spieth back in the days of
Tiger's
winning all the majors.
Right,
you could have
just kept rolling. Phil was his biggest competition, and he wasn't competition.
Yeah. Looking at the shortstop market, we talked earlier about Corey Seager, 325 over 10 with the Texas Rangers. Marcus Semien signing with the Texas Rangers as well. Javier Baez going to Detroit. It's gonna take a lot of money to sign Carlos Correa. I'm thinking north of $325 million, north of what Corey Seager got with Texas. There's a lot of optimists in this city, and that's great. I love optimists. I love them very much. That think that the more shortstops that sign, that more teams that are interested in shortstops are getting crossed off the list, and that by the process of elimination, that Carlos Correa has more and more of a chance to end up with the Houston Astros. I don't see it for a variety of reasons. I don't see it because the Astros are never going to spend $325 or over $325 for 10 for Carlos Correa. He's going to get that. I don't care that other shortstops already have. Correa's going to get more if he wants it than Seager did. And there's always a team interested. It only takes one. I think there's quite a bit of teams that are going to be interested in Carlos Correa.
Well, and I said the sleepers, the Cubs, that no one's talking about because they got a boatload of money and they're in a big market and they're trying to make a splash to stay relevant. As much of a fan draw as Wrigley Field is, they've got to be competitive on the field, and they traded away all their stars last year. So the Cubs are going to be a sleeper. The Yankees and the Dodgers are going to be kicking the tires. And as long as you got those three involved, prices are going through the roof. Years are not going to be a factor. Finances don't matter because they're just money-making machines, and that's going to take the Astros completely out of the equation. The other thing you have to factor in is because everybody loves the fact that this has been a winning juggernaut in Houston for the last several years. In order to continue to do that, you have to realize the money better spent on the back end of Correa's deal is better spent on Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez and some of the young pitchers who you decide to keep for the long term, as opposed to, oh, I can't bring that guy back or give him what he wants and he's going to go into free agency because I'm still paying Carlos Correa. That's why we said all along, from the sources that I had to the discussions that we've subsequently went through after that, the Astros were interested in 5, maybe 6 years. They were going to give him the AAV. They were going to give him maybe even a little extra to front load the deal, which was your suggestion initially. But they weren't going to overextend themselves so that it would limit them from being successful for the long term by securing and keeping those key players that are going to keep them relevant for years to come.
The Astros were introducing their new reliever to the Houston media today, and James Click was asked about their chances of re-signing Carlos Correa.
We're not focused on that right now. Right now, today is about Hector. We're excited to have Hector as part of the team. We'll address that at the appropriate time.
I think that's funny, what Click had to say. I don't disagree what Click did, by the way, either. Like, he wasn't going to turn that press conference into an off-season matters, a Carlos Correa press conference. That was just basically Click taking control of the press conference and making sure it didn't go down that route. Now, it is kind of funny when you look at it, though.
Well, I don't think what we were able to see, because it was audio, Jeremy, but he was also handed a cue card that said, turnovers and penalties. And then the other one that he was going to use, which is we're just going to keep everything internal on that. So, you know, basically that's internal. That's something we're going to handle internally. But he's not David Culley. But at the same time, this is why teams don't think these things through enough. The news has already reported the signing. You leave yourself in a vulnerable situation and you have to, you're either oblivious to the situation and naive, or you're just stupid in the fact that if you're going to have a press conference and you're expecting it to just be to talk about the relief pitcher you signed and not about the number one story on the timeline of every Astros fan and on and most Major League Baseball fans as the number one free agent out there, then don't do the press conference.
Yeah.
Just say, you know what, put out a statement. This is what we've done. It's not like a superstar caliber player in which it warrants a big to-do like the Rockets used to do with like the public viewing to come in and celebrate James Harden or Tracy McGrady or whatever. So then don't do the press conference because you know the media, even Houston media, are going to ask those hard-hitting questions.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, why even have the press conference? Because you know that's what you're going to be asked. I am a little surprised about that in hindsight that they had their introductory press conference today. All right, teams that could be in the market for Carlos Correa, just looking at, like, the past standings here. AL East, Tampa Bay, no, they have Franco. Boston, I still think Boston is a wild card because you can move Bogart, you can play Correa at third. You can move Devers across the diamond over to first base. You're better off in the relationship with Cora. He said he'd play third.
He might be forced and have to play third.
You offer him $350 million and the caveats to play third, he's going to play third.
I don't think so, man. I think that he's going to have other suitors where he doesn't have to play third. And so, and they're probably better teams.
But
so,
if they're the top bidder, you don't think he'd play third? You think he'd take less to play short?
I don't think you're ever going to have to worry about that. Because Boston, as much as they want to be the top bidder, I think the Yankees and Dodgers are going, yeah, hold my beer. I'm going to be a top bidder too, and you're going to play shortstop.
They might make more sense than Boston, but Boston to me is a possibility. Yankees for sure a possibility, even though they've talked about Andrelton Simmons and Isaiah Kiner, Falafel, whatever you want to say. The Yankees will be a possibility for Carlos Correa. Toronto, I don't think Toronto's a possibility. They already let Simeon walk. They have Bichette still at short.
But he ain't playing short, right? Yeah, Bichette's their short.
I don't see Toronto as a possibility. And they've also, like, Toronto's also shed some money this offseason too, right? Like, they're going the other way. How about Baltimore? Like, a team that has some young prospects that are ready to play. They have tons of money to spend. Mike Elias is their general manager, who's the guy that's credited for drafting Carlos Correa. You want to take a complete shot in the dark? Baltimore, to me, is in play.
But again, the rebuild's going to be so long for him.
Look, it's like a yes-no. Like, I'm not saying this is the ideal suitor. But Baltimore, would it shock you if Baltimore signs Correa?
I will see your point that they could be a sleeper, shot-in-the-dark type pick. But I think realistically, if we didn't have the Dodgers and the Cubs and the Yankees and possibly the Red Sox or another team involved, I would say, look, I mean, he's going to go where the money is. And maybe Baltimore makes sense. But because you've got those big three markets that are going to be doing everything in their power to catch his interest, I don't think that he's going to ever consider the Orioles.
Look, I'm not saying that the Baltimore's top five to bring in Correa. I'm just trying to accrue the amount of teams that could still be in play, because there's a lot of folks out there that think that there's like one or two teams in play. I find that to be silly. I just found three teams in the AL East for you. Boston, New York, Baltimore. AL Central, White Sox, no there with Tim Anderson. Cleveland, no. Like, they shed money. They traded
money,
Lindor. Yeah. Detroit, I still think Detroit's a possibility. They signed Javier Baez. Baez is versatile. Like, everybody was rolling the Rangers out of the shortstop sweepstakes after they started Simeon, but then they signed Corey Seager like 2 days
later.
I'll say this. Detroit's still in play.
You said this, and I thought there was no way in hell, but once that the Rangers weren't done when they got Simeon, and the fact that when I heard that the Rangers spent that amount of money to add Seager as the shortstop and that Simeon was going to slide over, I think now my thinking has changed. Anything's possible, Kevin Garnett. I think the fact that you know what? I can't rule them out. I can't say unequivocally, no way they're going to do that, because it is a possibility.
I'm ruling out Kansas City.
They don't have the money.
Should we rule out Minnesota?
Yeah.
As like a complete shot in the dark?
Well, because Minnesota, mid-market team, they were supposed to be active, but with what they paid Byron Buxton, they can't afford to go out and spend massive amounts of money on Correa.
I'll rule out Minnesota as well. The Astros really aren't involved in this. Like, I'm not ruling the Astros out completely in like a plausible possibility, because maybe Crane's like, okay, let's just bring them back. But in terms of other teams being interested, they're not part of this conversation. I still think Seattle could be a possibility for Carlos Correa as well.
I don't.
Why not?
They overspent. Look, we just got done talking about the fact that where they were spending their money, they got Robbie Ray.
They still have plenty of money.
Right, but they've done some things. They don't want to be the Rangers in desperation mode. They still are on a path on a path that they created for themselves on a timeline that has a lot of wiggle room, and you don't have to be there just yet. If this was urgency,
Correa fits the mold of that better than Robbie
Ray, though.
But you
got Crawford at shortstop already, and so you don't. There's no rush to say that's a gaping hole that we have to fill in our roster.
It's not gaping, but would Crawford be the deal breaker for bringing in Carlos Correa? Absolutely not.
No, it wouldn't be a deal breaker, but I think that because of the fact that they've guaranteed him and they've done everything. Look, he is their type, young franchise type player. He's their poor man's version of Correa, and they've said you're not going to move from shortstop.
Right, we'll give that one a half since we're not saying that as a possibility. Oakland, like for sure, no, right?
No, they don't spend money.
How about the Angels? They've spent money in the past. They spent money in the past.
They're not worried about any kind of luxury taxes and other things. They've overspent on everything that they've done. They've shown they don't know how to strategically run an organization from a baseball perspective because they've ignored the pitching while just overstocking the offense. Why wouldn't they add one more big dollar bat to a lineup that's going to be stacked? But if you can't get anybody out defensively, what the hell are you?
Texas, no. They've already signed two shortstops.
You're sure he could play third?
Atlanta, no. They're looking to bring back Freddie Freeman. Acuna's coming back for them as well.
And you got your boy at shortstop already.
My boy Dansby?
Yeah.
Dansby Swanson's Dansby my boy. Why is Dansby Swanson my
he's
boy?
He's kind of fits your mold.
Sure. Philadelphia? Absolutely is realistic. New York Mets? I consider them Mets realistic.
Wait, why is Philly realistic?
Well, they've been actually, I've seen their name mentioned in the Carlos Correa sweepstakes.
Didi Gregorius.
They're looking to trade him. And again, Didi Gregorius is not going to be the reason you wouldn't sign Carlos Correa.
But you're paying Bryce Harper. You've got Real Muto.
They
want to
spend money. They want to win. Right. I consider that a possibility for sure. The Mets, even though they're like $50 million over the luxury tax, Heyman tweeted today, they still want another starter. They still want another bat. I'm not ruling out the Mets. We'll give that a half. Miami, no. Washington?
They got a lot of money to spend.
Washington?
You could be a lot worse off than playing with, how old is he again? if you want to play with Soto. But again, Strasburg, you're hoping he comes back. But realistically, part of Correa's mantra is he wants to win. They're not ready to win for a couple of years.
I think Baltimore is more realistic than Washington. Milwaukee? No. St. Louis? No. Cincinnati? No, they're selling.
I'm telling you, St. Louis, the sleeper there.
I'll give you St. Louis.
They're looking at a shortstop, but I think because of the fact that his old teammates playing third base. I think Trevor Story is you want a dark horse for Trevor Story. I think it's the Cardinals.
Cubs, if they're willing to spend some money, they have plenty to spend.
They're in.
Pittsburgh, absolutely not. San Francisco, I don't really think San Francisco's a shot. Los Angeles, they hate Carlos Correa.
Big time.
You think
it's
a shot?
Big time shot.
All right, there's 10. How about San Diego?
Nope.
San Diego's been known to make splashes, though.
They've already, but look, they're overpaying the entire left side of their infield.
Fernando Tatis is not going to play shortstop.
Yes, he is. He absolutely is. And because you know why? Because that's where Fernando Tatis wants to play.
Colorado?
If you did it the team way, he'd be playing the outfield. He wants to play shortstop. Manny Machado's playing third. They are not signing Carlos Correa.
Colorado?
God, who would want to go there?
A guy that wants to hit 50 home runs a year?
Because they overspent on Arenado, and they got him out of town as fast as they could with buyer's remorse, thinking, we can't spend that much money. There's no way. And their own guy's a free agent. So you're going to pass on Trevor Story, and you're going to bring in Carlos Correa, and you're going to spend that money. They're not doing it. But they're not doing it. They're not spending money.
I'll side with you on that one. Not doing it. But he is better than Story. Arizona?
Nah.
10.5 teams we just counted up that could be interested in Carlos Correa. Like, everybody's saying the market's dry. 10.5 teams right there that are plausible to bring Carlos Correa into their team. Where'd we go wrong? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. You want another example of Texans culture? I'll give it to you next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
No, Tim is my play caller, and he'll stay the play caller.
Tim Kelly is the play caller for David Culley, defending Tim Kelly after the game. Good question from Cody Stutes. I like the way Cody phrased that question, too, by the way. He asked him, is Tim Kelly going to remain your play caller? He didn't say, are you going to fire Tim Kelly? Because there's no way they're going to fire Tim Kelly at this point. But you might change the play calling, right, a little bit.
I mean, why are we talking about the play calling for the second worst team in the league? Sorry, Brendan. But, I mean, when we talk about the Houston Texans, and if the major area of concern is the play calling for a team that's this bad.
I mean, play calling's pretty important.
I get it's important if your team is important, if it's relevant, if you're trying to win football games. And again, I go back to, one, they're not trying to win football games. Two, because, but I guess Tyrod Taylor starting says there's still a sense that they want to be competitive. But overall, the play calling, but it's not Tim Kelly's fault that the roster is just garbage and the fact that whatever they're trying to do, they can't do wrong right. But okay.
So you're on the David Culley side of things, but you're going to defend Tim Kelly.
He's going to finish up the year as the offensive coordinator. You want David Culley calling plays?
How about Pep Hamilton?
Pep Hamilton, maybe. But I don't think I don't know what Pep Hamilton's experience is calling plays, but I would say this, no matter who's calling the plays, it's like no matter who's that quarterback, it's not going to make a difference in the big picture. You have no running game to speak of no matter what. If you want balance and a new coordinator is going to come in and try and balance, Johnson is not going to give you what you need. They just – Woodhead's not – they did just – I look at this night, or Burkhead. Burkhead, Woodhead, whatever.
So many stereotypes there.
I mean, you look at it to me and you say, okay, yeah, it's like spilled milk. I don't think any kind of change, quarterback or coordinator, is going to make a difference for this season.
See, I see your point in terms of like what it looks like, small picture, the tree, not the forest. But to me, there is a big picture scope to this, though, because you're trying to make decisions on the coaching staff going forward. And I'm not in the position where I feel like David Culley should be fired, because, again, the next head coach the Texans should hire needs to inspire hope to the Houston Texans organization. The roster's not there yet.
No, but to that point, Tim Kelly's not going to be the offensive coordinator. He's not going to be on a coach on this staff next year.
See, and I think that's the question. One more real quick from David Culley. He defended Tim Kelly. Culley, it's tough to say 10 times fast. He defended Kelly
Woodhead,
after
Burkhead.
The game on Sunday, and then Monday doubled down on the defense of Tim Kelly.
You said you're going to stick with Tim as your play caller. But
that's not even a question about Tim being the play caller.
Has performed, why not?
We got to play better. It has nothing to do with the play call. It has something to do with us playing better and doing things the right way.
I think you and David Culley just became best friends.
Not even close, because I don't chew on my tongue like that. Here's the thing. Tim Kelly only had a job because of Deshaun Watson. Deshaun's not going to be here next year. Tim Kelly's not going to be here next year. It started off like there were some signs that without Bill O'Brien breathing down his neck and looking over his shoulder that he might be a decent coordinator. But this is why I'm talking about the big picture. The big picture is they're just going through the motions. They're playing the schedule to get through the rest of the season, and then they will completely overhaul everything with the draft.
I don't care who's calling plays for the remainder of the season. That's where I agree with you. But to me, there is a lot more big picture in this conversation that I think you're willing to admit here, because you are trying to make a decision on, one, if Tim Kelly's going to be back next season, and he shouldn't be. 100% with you. Tim Kelly should not be back as the OC of this football team. I think that the offense has more talented players on the offensive side than the defense does. But Lovie Smith is getting far more out of that lesser talent on the defensive side than Tim Kelly's getting on the offensive side. It's a great point by you. Tim Kelly was here with the idea of maybe you can talk Deshaun Watson back to be the quarterback of this football team. That ship has sailed. The Tim Kelly ship has sailed. So for sure, Tim Kelly should not be the OC and the play caller in 2022.
Right.
For the remainder of the season, I don't care. And if the idea is like, well, you need to find out who Pep Hamilton is as a play caller, I don't want to screw up the idea that Pep Hamilton could be the play caller on this team next year. For the points that David Culley said, the talent's so bad, I don't want Pep Hamilton to look like an idiot for the final few games of the season because he has a bad offense.
I don't mind that. I think that's a good point. I was thinking that you were going with this, and the flip side for me was going to be, I would be more concerned about Tim Kelly calling plays if Davis Mills was my quarterback. Because now I'm trying to develop a quarterback that's going to be part of a system that I'm trying to put in place that's going to be for the future and see what he's got. So I need a guy that's really focused on developing this quarterback. That's why Pep Hamilton could be the guy, because he's got a background in developing quarterbacks. But if I'm just getting through the motions with Tyrod Taylor as my starting quarterback, then I don't give a rat's ass who my offensive coordinator is who's calling plays, because obviously the bigger objective is not focused on the future and the big picture after this season.
The conversation is a one to be had. But to me, the conversation doesn't take place until two things. One, if you're going to finish out the season with Davis Mills, or two, you're starting to look ahead to the 2022 season and it's in the offseason. It's a 2-9 team. The offense is not very good in any metric. Like, eye test, the roster is abysmal. They're 28th in DVOA on Football Outsiders. They have the second worst offense in the entire NFL when you look at it from, like, a passing perspective. You want to look at rushing yards, it's even worse. Like, the Texans just aren't a very talented football team. There's no doubt about that. My viewpoint of this, though, is, like, again, who do you want calling plays the rest of the season? I say you see it through with Tim Kelly. Like, it's already a sinking ship. Why do you want to attach Pep Hamilton to that sinking ship? And then now you know that Pep Hamilton's been ruined. Because in my mind, the Texans have already made the decision. They've already made the decision that Tim Kelly's not going to be the offensive coordinator for this team in 2022. They've already made the decision, in my opinion, that Pep Hamilton will be the offensive coordinator in 2002. Because I don't think there's going to be wholesale changes to this coaching staff, because the Texans roster isn't ready for wholesale changes on this coaching staff yet. And the idea behind finishing the year with Tim Kelly, and maybe with how defensive David Culley is of Tim Kelly, whether it was Sunday or whether it was him doubling down on Monday, is because he doesn't want to expose Pep Hamilton to the sinking ship offensively, and then they can't even bring back Pep Hamilton because he looked bad over the final six games of the season.
I think that, you know, I was trying to think of the most known city in the world that leads the world in the amount of bridges per capita of people, because that's exactly what we're talking about here. We're talking about one franchise that is going to have more bridges than in Portland, Oregon, where the entire city is dissected by rivers and there's bridges all over the place. That's what the Texans are doing right now. They're just biding their time. They're bridging the gap between suck and the upward climb. That's what they're trying to accomplish. So right now, no one's getting fired because they don't need to take on any extra financial burden until the team and the roster shows that it's worthy of an upgrade. I think that from the standpoint of the offensive play calling, just like we talked about, the roster's terrible, the running backs are awful, the fact that you're experimenting with a veteran quarterback and not giving this young kid you drafted the chance to at least see what you got with him leads you to believe there's nothing that needs to be changed, because there's nothing that they're really truly focused behind the closed doors in trying to accomplish this season from a win-loss perspective.
I misspoke. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
But I think I'm with you in the fact that, just like I think Lovie Smith, as long as he wants to be here in his contract, I don't know what it is, but I would assume Lovie Smith has solidified the fact he'll be the DC next year. I would love to have Pep Hamilton back offensively, whether it's the quarterback's coach or more. So I don't want to lose him, because he's got that reputation and he's got the end results that you need.
See, that's my fear, is if you expose him to a terrible offense over the final six games of the season, now you get to a spot where he looks bad in the final six as a play caller because lack of talent, that you can't bring him back as the OC. So Tim Kelly, the bridge word that you want to use, is the bridge to get to Pep Hamilton next year. To me, it's just to make sure that you don't have another person on the Titanic.
Sure,
let Tim Kelly take all the grief.
You know, I'm a firm believer in the whole direct communication thing. That's why you go to Pep Hamilton and go, look, at this point, I would like you to be my offensive coordinator, but I'm not going to do that to you. Because it's like Steven Silas, right? You get your first coaching job or your first OC coordinator, your first offensive coordinator job, but yet you don't have the resources to compete, and all you get is a track record and a resume that says you suck at your job because your one win-loss total is awful. So I go to Pep Hamilton and I go, look, you're in our long-term plans. You're in our long-term future. And this is probably better coming from Caserio than Culley, because Culley is not going to be from a standpoint of strength where you believe, well, just because I'm in your plans doesn't mean I'm in Nick's.
Caserio's the boss.
Caserio goes to Pep and says, under a regular circumstance with a team that's competitive, this is the point in the year where I would turn over play calling to you and I would say, let's see what you can do. But I'm not going to do that to you this year because of the fact that the roster sucks. You're limited in what you can do. The team's already basically mailing it in. So let's wait till next season, but I want you to be here.
Yeah, to me, that message and that conversation either has been had or should be had. Texans, I misspoke a little bit there. They have the second worst passing offense in the NFL, the worst rushing offense in the NFL. They're dead last in points per game across the entire NFL, just under 15 per game, and they have the worst yards per game in the entire NFL, 265. Why would you expose Pep Hamilton to that? You wouldn't if he's going to be the offensive coordinator next year. Coming up next, NFL Hall of Fame voter Howard Balzer joins the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before the break, I want to tell you again about Fitz Roofing. Look, Corey is not only the owner of the company, he's the vice president of the Houston Roofing Association. So what that basically means is he comes to the table with credibility. He's in that job for a reason, so therefore he knows what he's doing. He's an expert in his field, and that field is going to be needed by you if you need anything done, from home repairs or a fence in your yard to a new roof or a repaired roof on your home or your business. Commercial projects are just the same as the residential ones that they do. They do phenomenal work. Their reputation speaks for itself, and they have the best ratings in the business, the best warranties to boot, and they use the best products. Why would you go anywhere else? Go to FITZRoofing.com right now and see all the different ways Fitz can make a difference in what you're doing on a daily basis around your home. And also, while you're there, figure out what I've been telling you about for a long time, and that is they do free no obligation inspections that cost you absolutely nothing. So why wouldn't you at least kick the tires and see what they can do for you? You got a problem? You call Fitz. They come out and they tell you what they can do and what it's going to cost. If you want them to come back, book the appointment. There's nobody better in the city of Houston. But you know what? You're not on the hook either. You haven't paid for anything and you haven't signed anything. So therefore, they're going to tell you what they tell you. And if you don't like it, you're free to choose whoever you want to do that work. I'm just telling you, you're going to make a mistake if you don't go to Fitz, because Fitz takes care of you every step of the way. It's Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joining us now on the HR&P guest line, Howard Balzer, NFL Hall of Fame voter, joining us. Howard, good to talk to you as always. Texans are in a bit of a situation this past Sunday. They benched one of their best defensive players for what they're calling a breaking of the standard. Ryan Clark said that after Justin Reed told him this, that it was a disagreement over watching film, and that he was asked a question and didn't really, David Culley didn't like the answer that he got. Where do you stand? Year one, Texans trying to rebuild who they are. They're not a very good football team. Where do you stand on benching one of your starters for culture, but then also risking a chance to get a victory against a bad Jets team?
Obviously, you have to keep consistency in what you want from your players, and if that's, you certainly believe that's accurate in the way it's being described, at least from that end of it, and to bench a guy because maybe there's a little disagreement about an answer on something, that seems to be, I mean, that seems to be a little far afield, but there's always two sides to every story. I'm sure David Culley will probably be asked about that tomorrow. We'll see how much that he decides to reveal. Probably won't decide to reveal much, but you do have to set a standard, but you also have to be smart about it. And I think back, and this comes to mind, I guess, maybe because of, you know, Michael Strahan getting his number retired with the Giants over the weekend. I recall when Tom Coughlin came to the Giants, and he was just a dictator. I mean, he wanted things a certain way. The whole thing that if you know you're only on time for a meeting if you're 5 minutes early. And he wanted to enforce that standard. And at some point, leaders on the team went to him and said, "Hey, man, you just got to let up here. We're professionals. At some point, you just have to trust us." And he eased up, and we know what the result was for the Giants after that. So I'm not saying that David Culley is Tom Coughlin, but you do have to be, I think, you know, really careful in the way you do things, especially if this is the way it was. What message does that send to everybody else on the team? Oh, my goodness, I might just be a little bit wrong on something, and I'm going to get benched. And so I guess the key is how much of this is truly accurate and what happened, and we'll see if David Culley tries to explain it more in terms of what he was doing, because you do understand at times what a coach is trying to instill in a football team.
All right, Howard, I want to get to some of the national perspective. You cover the Cardinals. They got the best record in the NFC, but we're getting to that point in the year where we start deciphering who's a contender, who's a pretender. We saw the Seahawks last night. They're completely out of it now. They've fallen apart, and it may be the end of the dynasty. I'm kidding to say dynasty, but the long run of the Seahawks from the Legion of Boom and maybe Russ's final swan song with Seattle. But when you look at it, you say, well, the Rams, everybody thought were gearing up for a Super Bowl, and they took it in the shorts in Lambeau. You've got the Cowboys, who were said to be contenders, and then they lost to the Raiders. As you look at primarily the NFC, but then in both conferences, who do you see legitimately as contenders, and who are some of these teams that are just kind of pretending for the time being?
It's a great question because every time we think one of those teams is a contender, they play a game that you say, wow, how did that happen? And it's happened to just about everybody this season, which makes it really, really hard to figure out because there's so many teams that are so close to each other. It appears in the NFC that the Cardinals and the Packers might be the real thing, but you still have six games. You know, you still have six games for most of these teams to figure it all out. And how will it truly end up? I mean, the AFC is just a total muddle. I mean, you have the Ravens right now with the best record in the AFC, and I don't know that they've played the best football. I guess you could argue, well, they've had the best record. They must have played the best football, but they've won some games ugly during this stretch, and you wonder if Kansas City is now primed to make that run and end up where everybody thought they would be. So I don't know if this is more wide open than it's been in years. It certainly feels that way with the teams at the top, but it'll probably come down to, obviously, who's healthiest, who plays best down the stretch, and maybe the biggest surprise could be New England. We're not surprised now because of where they are, but I don't think anyone would have expected them to be entering this final stretch of the season in first place in the division, playing the Bills twice in the final weeks of the season, and perhaps being in that spot to all of a sudden have as good a chance as anybody to advance. I think that's how close it is between all these top teams.
I don't think anybody expected that, too, when they were struggling to beat a Texans team in Houston early in the year. Howard Balzer joining us on the HRMP guest line. What do you think? I mean, we're 11, 12 games in for most of these teams into the NFL season. In this seventh playoff spot, the final wild card spot that they added to the NFL for the first time this season, I don't know if I love it. Now, more teams are certainly involved in the playoff discussion. Right now, if you look at the AFC, you would have a three-way tie with the Chargers, Broncos, and Raiders for that seventh spot. Then you look over at the NFC, and you would have a four-way tie with a bunch of 5 and 6 teams, Washington, Minnesota, Atlanta, New Orleans. Like, it's great from the race, but from my perspective, Howard, I wonder your thoughts on this. I feel like bad football teams are going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't know if you can say bad, but you can certainly say average, because the final spot could very well go to a team that's either, 8-9 or 9-8. But last year, the Bears were in the playoffs. They were the seventh team, and last year was the first year for that extra team, and they were 8-8. I mean, they were a 500 team. And so I think there's a heck of a chance, obviously, of that happening again. And you mentioned, the AFC has more winning teams, teams with winning records than the NFC with 9-6. But as you noted, several of those with that winning record in the AFC are 6-5. And so one game away from being 500. So they'll probably be average teams. But I think with the NFL, if you can have a winning record, that's still pretty good, because this is a hard league to win games. And how much of a difference, when you really look at it in perspective, how much of it, if a team goes 9-8, let's say, how much of a difference is it between going 9-8 and maybe, 11-6? Then again, you can look at the flip side. Well, if you're 9-8, you weren't that far from being 7-10. But that's just the way it is with a sport that only plays now 17 games. So, but yeah, there probably will be some, quote, teams with average records in the postseason, but still, whichever team it is and finishes the season strong, they could upset the apple cart and win a game or two. I mean, heck, we saw last year. Look at the Tampa Bay wins the Super Bowl, right? But their first playoff game was against Washington, that was only in the playoffs because they were in the NFC East. And what did they win? It was the 6 or 7 games, whatever it was. And I'll tell you, they were right there with the Buccaneers for that entire game in the first postseason game, and that was with Taylor Heineke at quarterback. So any one of those teams could potentially be dangerous, because it is just one game and done, obviously.
And Howard, the way I look at it is a little bit differently than Jeremy, and from the perspective of, sure, I understand that there's a lot of teams that might be considered bad teams that are going to try and fight their way in and sneak into the playoffs. It's also punishment for the top teams in the league, because you talk about the Cardinals or the Packers, and they play all year to try and get that bye. And now instead of two, there's one. And then lo and behold, if a team like the Niners sneaks in with an offensive mind like Kyle Shanahan, and if you talked about health, if they suddenly get healthy and Samuels is healthy and the guys that they need are on board – and suddenly you got a one-and-done situation against a Niners team that wasn't right all year that gets right, that could be a trap for a lot of good teams, too, and I'm sure they're not thrilled about it.
No, I think you're 100% right, and that's a perfect example because, of course, the 49ers were a team was just in the Super Bowl a couple of years. So if they have it rolling and continue to play the way they are now, you're right. They are going to be a difficult out. And let's say you look at some of those, the 6-5 teams in the AFC, and I'll look at the Chargers and the Raiders. They've played pretty good football at times. Inconsistent, yes, but the Raiders were 5-2. At one point. So one of those teams gets in, and could they go in and upset a Buffalo or beat one of these others? Yeah, they definitely could, especially when you have good quarterback play and a pretty good overall, a decent overall team. Tough to win on the road in the playoffs, no doubt about it, but you certainly can't discount it happening because, once again, as I've noted, it's just hard to win in this league, and you just play your best game and play well against one of those better teams. And, yeah, you worked hard to win that division, get that home game. But, hey, you can get knocked off. I'm not going to say easily, but you better come ready to play your best football. Otherwise, you're going to be going home before you know it.
Howard, we've had you on all throughout the NFL season, and we always enjoy our Tuesday conversations. I'm a little embarrassed to ask you this for the first time. But who's your college football team?
Who's my college football?
Yeah, do you have a college football team that you pull for?
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. I really don't have one. More than any. I mean, I grew up in the East, so I was kind of a Penn State guy. So I kind of like to see when they do well. Lived in St. Louis for many years, and so it was Missouri. They haven't been very good for a long time. So I just enjoy watching college football just for the enjoyment of it and seeing great games and seeing great outcomes. And sometimes that's the best way to view it because if you're not really have a rooting interest or really want a team to win badly, it's a lot more fun to watch at times. I've kind of taken a liking being in Arizona now for a year. I like to see just where you are. You like to see the local teams do well, and Arizona State is a little better than average, but you like to see them do a little bit better. But yeah, like I said, overall, it's just, hey, just I just like to see good football and competitive football. And boy, I'll tell you, last weekend was wild with some of those games in the college sport.
Howard, I'm interested from the perspective of the league, couple of key awards and where you might be leaning in terms of if you're voting coach of the year. I mean, I heard a lot of names thrown out, and I'm curious your thoughts. I just think Bill Belichick has done something that no other coach in this league could have thought about doing with where they came from to where they are, but I might be sleeping on someone, so I'm interested there from your perspective. And then MVP. We've heard a lot of names thrown out. We've seen a Jonathan Taylor try to sneak into the mix, and we've seen all the negativity off the field with a guy like Aaron Rodgers, but is what he did again last week against the Rams putting him in the conversation?
Well, he's definitely in the conversation. Aaron Rodgers has to be every year. Sometimes voters will look and say, well, he won last year. I don't think that should matter. But if he's far above the crowd, then you have to vote with him. And in a full disclosure, I am one of the voters for that award. And I usually try not to get involved too much in it at this time, because I think it's crazy the way it is every week, with especially now with all these betting houses putting out odds every week. And, of course, it changes every week based on every game. And I usually say, hey, let's wait till the dust clears and see how it finishes. But in terms of MVP, one thing I definitely believe, this could be one of the more wide-open votes in a long time. There's only 50 people who vote, so it's not like there's hundreds of votes that are going to decide this. And when you look at a Rodgers, it's tough now because you're saying, and here's an interesting thing, guys, on the MVP. I did this study last year. The average, over the last 21 years, the average wins for the team that has the league MVP is in the regular season is around 13. So
wow.
Now how much that changes now with 17 games, we'll see, but you have to figure it's still going to be in that same area. So who are going to be those teams that win that many games? It could very well be the Packers. Do the Chiefs finish strong and all of a sudden Patrick Mahomes comes back from a rocky beginning? Kyler Murray has missed 3 games with the Cardinals, but if he comes back and the Cardinals end up winning 13 games, who knows, and he plays really well down the stretch and the Cardinals have number one seed, he will get votes. Will it be enough to win? who knows? I mean, I think there's a lot of different candidates this year, which could make the voting very close. As for Coach of the Year, you know, I'm pretty sure I'm right on this. I don't think Belichick's ever won it, which is pretty bizarre in a lot of ways. But it gets to a point after a while where everyone just expects him to be good, even though no one expected the Patriots to be this good, at least where they are right now. But that it usually goes to someone on a team that it's not expected to do that well. So I think Cliff Kingsbury is certainly in the conversation. Hey, I think Matt LaFleur should be in the conversation. I mean, look what he's done with the Packers, all the distractions, all the things going on with that team, and here they are, one of the best records in the NFL. So I think there's a lot of pretty good candidates, but that could end up being a pretty split vote too. But it all depends on how these teams finish in the regular season, and it'll probably come from one of the teams with one of those, you know, with one of those buys. I'm sorry, not one of the buys, but at least a team that has won the division. So wide open. Hey, you can make a case for Zach Taylor in Cincinnati. I mean, who would have ever think the Bengals would be 7-4 and be in position to possibly win that division? So I think all these, you know, these awards are wide open, and it's going to be very interesting to see how it comes out when all said and done.
Sounds like some good betting tips. Howard, always enjoy the conversation.
Thanks,
enjoy
Howard.
Your week 13. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Howard Balzer, voter of all kinds, MVP, Coach of the Year, NFL Hall of Fame voter as well.
I want to break bread with Howard someday. He's just is that good of a dude.
Absolutely. I'd like to drink some red wine with Howard. I don't know why I said that, but it just seems like that would be a drink that Howard would enjoy.
Fine Corinthian leather?
Maybe. Okay. I don't know about that, but maybe.
Not your undershorts. I'm talking about the couch.
How does movement on the shortstop market affect the Carlos Correa Houston Astros situation? And should the Texans want Justin Reed back? We ask one of the Wheelhouse Men that when we return. It's the Killer Bees. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Blue and Red Rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Cody Stutz sitting in with us. Final segment of the Killer Bees ahead of the Wheelhouse, 3-7 on ESPN 97.5, ESPN at 92.5. We saw Corey Seager, 325 for 10, go to Arlington and be a Ranger. Javier Baez, a big contract. He's headed to Detroit. How do you think this movement on the shortstop market is going to affect Carlos Correa and the Houston Astros?
Well, I mean, it's Carlos Correa is going to get paid if somebody's going to give him that money that he actually wants. Or, you know, maybe there's that last ditch. Remember, this is a team that offered Bryce Harper a one-year, $45 million deal one time.
Different GM,
but the owner was willing to pay it. So maybe if Carlos gets a little nervous in the next, you know, 8 hours or so, because you got to think too. If you're going to do a deal, you got to have time to get the physical done, so it can be you can execute the deal ahead of the deadline tomorrow. So you're running out of time. Like we're probably very close to the point where we're not going to hear any more significant deals popping up.
Yeah, I mean, agree to a deal and then do the physical when the lockout ends. You could do something like that to kind of reset it if you fell the physical. I don't think anybody's worried about that. So you think Correa gets over 325?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I do too. What do you think about the idea that the market is dried up though?
Dried up?
Yeah. Dried up, that the market is dried up on the Carlos Correa market is dried up. There's not many other teams that'll be interested in a shortstop.
Well, somebody will. There's always somebody that pops up. I saw this morning Ken Rosenthal mentioned potentially the Nationals or the Cubs would want to pay him as the face of their rebuild.
Yeah, we counted 10.5 teams, Joel and I, that could potentially be options for the Houston Astros.
Who's the half team?
We disagreed on one.
If we disagree, we're not going to completely rule it out.
Gotcha.
Actually, I think we disagreed on three. So there was three halves that came into play.
Wait, so there was eight teams and the three half teams? Or nine teams and three half
teams?
Yeah,
nine teams and the three half teams.
You can go back and listen to it. It was a little bit of a drawn-out process.
Okay, all right. All right.
But it worked.
Now, the Houston Texans, something we kicked around a little bit earlier today, Justin Reed, a free agent at the end of the year, was a healthy scratch this past Sunday for not meeting the standards that the Houston Texans have for their players. We're on the side, Joel and I, that the Texans should not bring back Justin Reed. And look, it's a two-way conversation, right? It takes two to tango. But do you think the Texans should be interested in bringing back Justin Reed?
I do think they should be interested in bringing back Justin Reed because I think everything points to Lovie Smith being the defensive coordinator for this team next year, and you're going to have some guys left over that know how to run Lovie's system at all three levels. You're going to have some of these defensive linemen, which you will. There have been a couple guys stand out that are going to be on the team next year. Jonathan Grenard, most notably among them. The linebackers, Cunningham still under contract. I'm assuming people want KGH back. And they're going to need somebody in the secondary that knows how to run Lovie's system. I would think Justin Reed, but I'm also not paying a tremendous amount of money for Justin Reed. Like, I'm not breaking the bank for him.
Here's the alternative question for you then, Cody. As much as they would want him back or think that they'd like to have him back, did they sever all ties with him with the way they handled this thing this last week?
I would be very interested to know when he gets in the building, if that conversation is with David Culley or if that conversation is with the Minister of Culture, Jack Easterby. Because if Easterby smooths everything over and pretends like it's hunky-dory and so on and so forth, maybe Justin Reed be like, okay, well, you know, I consider this thing. Ultimately, though, if I'm Justin Reed, I'm going to try to play some winning football.
Yeah, he knows what winning football. Why do I want to be here? I just got completely dragged through the mud in the media. I don't want to be part of a rebuild if I don't have to, and the choice is mine.
Yep.
And if the money is the same or at least somewhat close to the same after everything that I've just been through and experienced and know where this team's going, I'm out.
You run into the precarious position if you're the Texans of, well, if I'm a veteran and I'm signing a deal for more than 1 or 2 years, how soon before one of these multitude of draft picks that they have is at my position and I don't get to see the third or fourth year of my deal, I only get to see 2 years of my deal. So that's where you start overpaying for guys, and that's really a situation that they're just going to be in for a couple of years because they're a really bad football team.
I also don't know if the money that Justin Reed's going to demand in free agency or probably even get in free agency backs up the value that he gives you on the field, like a 55 Pro Football Focus grade. Like, to me, he's not an upper echelon safety in the NFL. True. And if his demands are upper echelon money and you start to get into the financial side of it, it's a salary cap league. Can you get value similar to what Justin Reed gives you at a lower price? To me, that's an avenue that Nick Caserio would kick around.
Well, and that's another thing, too, is like, are they going to still see this as, well, we just need a veteran in here to fill a year or two before someone that we think. Like, if they end up with 2 top 10 picks, they draft a safety out of Notre Dame, you don't need Justin Reed.
Yeah.
But the tough part is free agency happens well before the draft. You might guess where your picks are. You might have an idea who you're picking. You're going to have to make a decision on Justin Reed before you start making a decision on the future.
Well, shouldn't that decision have already been made? Because if it was already made that it's going to be tough to bring him back, you trade him at the trade deadline, you get something back for him.
Yeah, we're sitting here back-to-back years where because you got to think about this, too. Somebody's going to bring up that they could get a comp pick if he signs somewhere else and he plays really well. They're going to sign a lot of free agents to fill out the roster, so I'm guessing that they're not going to be in the comp pick formula. So, no, they're not going to get a third-round pick when Justin Reed signs somewhere else.
What's coming up on the Wheelhouse?
It's a great question. Now, obviously, we're going to talk a lot about the shortstop situation. And, I mean, James Click is just – he's really kind of disappointing me. I'm not feeling it with James Click. I'm just not feeling it.
He disappointed me last offseason when his two relievers were Stanek and Baez whenever you desperately needed a bullpen. I would be disappointed if they don't bring in another bullpen arm, and I don't believe they are. I mean, the quote he had today where Baez and Montero are expected to be contributors next year, that to me was raising up the flag saying, we're done. We're closed up for shop. Lockout tomorrow. We're done. We're out of it.
When did the memo come out that Baez had something done medically to give him 7 miles an hour back? That's all I want to know.
Yeah, he looked awful.
I would say that he's a sticky stuff guy, but based on how he looked, he did things.
He's
that
a smelly stuff guy because he got worse, and they paid him for 2 years.
Exactly. Sticky stuff ain't adding 7 miles per hour to the fastball. Maybe helps out the control a little bit. So you wearing the golf clothes out there to Wildcat tomorrow, Joel?
No,
I'm going.
I'll be presentable for sure, and
you're
I may
not
hit
taking
some
the
golf
sticks?
Balls. I don't know. It depends on. I mean, you're the one that's hell-bent. No, but you've been so hell-bent on this. You're playing and all that other stuff. I've been through enough of these to realize, like I said, this is the John Granato Invitational, and I'm just happy to be there.
Well, he's earned his stripes. I want to be John Granato one day when I grow up. I want to be John Granato. I'm just saying. I'm bringing the sticks. I'm bringing the golf gear. I might even show up in my spikes. I might show up in my golf spikes. To Wildcat.
And that's on you.
For everybody going out there, we hope to see you out there tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Want to thank Brendan for doing all the hard work.
Right.
You said Brandon earlier. Absolutely. That's why I said it. Want to thank Brendan for all the hard work. He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. We'll talk
You're
to you
Jerry.
Tomorrow.
Get it straight, Houston, Jer.
The Wheelhouse next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Oh. This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.